Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Got a lot to talk about. This is the series. I mean, it has been for years, Ryan. It's been the series. I personally, I'll wait till October. That's what my message was from last year. I mean, who cares? Lose every series in the season. Don't have any chance at all. Be the little brother. Gosh, the little brother. You're like the baby brother, the infant brother to the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. How are you playing in September, October? Alas, here we are at the beginning of May. It is a big series. I am excited. How you feeling? What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, for fans especially, nothing compares to a home series with the Dodgers. And it's strange. I mean, it's Cinco de Mayo, right? It's May 5th, and they haven't played the Dodgers yet. To me, that's what's been so strange is we've been able to see, you know, a whole portion of the Padres season has laid out already this year without the Dodgers first stepping in. So I think that that's really what makes this series unique is I think we have a pretty good idea of who the Padres are at this point. We know what their strengths and weaknesses are. We've seen the Dodgers struggle. And, you know, that's what I think is going to make for three pretty fun-filled nights at Petco Park. Kevin, before we get on to the Dodgers, though, I think there are a couple of things we need to talk about. Padres sure. Take 2-3 against the Reds. A certain slumping left-hander seems to have figured it out, at least in the short term. What did you see out of Juan Soto the last couple of days? And is it safe to say that he's well yet, or is he better? Where are we at?
You know, this was a very Juan Soto-like stretch, right? What was it? He's got a six-game hitting streak going. He's 9 of 20, 4 doubles, a home run, I think. Let me check, make sure I get this right. Oh, yeah. I was going to say 9 walks during that time. Well, you know what? You'll take those 9 walks when they're accompanied by 9 hits, 4 doubles. Hits at some big times, much like the rest of the Fernando, Manny, Soto, top of the order there in the 10th inning the other day. They all failed. You wouldn't have bet that, but Soto's come through with some big hits. I don't know. Is he going with what? Because he's not like hitting it to all fields, but he is using center field a little bit more. He's still pulling the ball a lot. He's hitting the ball hard. He's finding holes. That is what I think Juan Soto's strength was. Both he and Xander Bogaerts might be the best at that on this team of finding holes versus, you know, I don't know, just hitting the ball hard and getting it in the air. These guys are kind of old school ball players and take pride in that. And I think that's what I'm seeing out of Juan Soto. I always tell you, I'm not a coach or a scout. I don't see much different. There's the other day when Bob Melvin said, you know, I'm not taking him out of the lineup because he's starting to swing good. I'm like, man, I noticed some swings during that game that didn't look good. So, well, I'm going to go with what Bob Melvin says because he's the manager for 20 years.
Sure. I also think too, that I think not you, Kevin, but I think a lot of people are quick to dismiss the walks, you know, as I was told as a light hitting, not very good baseball player and then softball player, walks as good as a hit, Kevin. I mean, it's as good as a single at least. And this is a guy who walks more and better than almost anybody in baseball. Even when he was struggling, his on base percentage was still very, very respectable. Because he was able to walk someone.
We have an expectation issue here. Yes. People that are upset with Juan Soto's walks have every right to be when you consider that C.J. Abrams, James Wood, Mackenzie Gore were given up. The Padres are paying $23 million, and they're not doing that for a guy who has a two, whatever it was. Let's say it's up to 225 now, 225 batting average.
Sure.
OPS was at that time like 700. That's not what you're paying for. That's not what you paid for in terms of the prospect capital. But you are correct that like if there weren't those expectations, but there are. Like, hey, this guy's getting on base. Yes, that's great, and that's why I say you'll take the 9 walks. I mean, that's incredible. 9 walks and 9 hits in your last 29 plate appearances. That's mind-boggling. That's the Juan Soto you thought you were going to get. Your original question was boiled down to, is he back? It looks like it, like in terms of the results that he's getting, the confidence is matching the swagger for, you know, one of the rare times that we've seen him in what is now like the equivalent of a half season.
Sure, sure. Kevin, Brett Sullivan was the hero of Wednesday's game. Really nice to see a career minor leaguer, a guy who was kind of an afterthought, I even think, in spring training, come in, get his first career home run, deliver more RBIs later in the game. From what you've seen of him at the plate, does Austin Nola have to worry about playing every day? I mean, is Brett Sullivan going to be splitting time more with Nola because of what he's doing?
He could get a little bit more, but it's we're talking about maybe him catching a Waka, catching Snell. But Brett Sullivan is still learning how to be a catcher, much as Austin Nola was for a time. Sure. Austin Nola is the superior defensive catcher. Let's not put too much stock in that, but that's just a fact. And let's also remember that Bob Melvin values that. Brett Sullivan is, I mean, first off, seems to be a great guy, very enthusiastic, a good teammate. I think that he puts the ball in play. All right. I think that that's a valuable thing, but it's not like when you weigh all the factors that suddenly Brett Sullivan's going to be, as Luis Campusano was probably headed toward had he kept hitting, the majority of the playing time was probably the trajectory you were going to see. That's not what's going to be happening here.
Sure. It's we'll talk a little bit later in the episode about pitching matchups for the weekend and the Dodgers and all of that. Joe Musgrove pitches Sunday. How's his toe from what you've seen of him so far? Is he back?
Seems like, Joe's figuring it out because Joe hasn't pitched a lot. And so he was supposed to start tonight. Instead, we get, a game two matchup, a rematch from the NLDS last year. We get Darvish versus Kershaw. Joe has a blister on his foot. Not sure which foot, what it is.
Okay.
I'm just going to throw this out here. This could just be a fun little story I'm telling you, or it could be the reason that Joe Musgrove has a blister on his foot. Standing out on the turf, on artificial turf at our Estadio Alfredo Harpelu on Sunday, and they had just measured the temperature on the turf as 120 degrees and rising. And Joe Musgrove, who has a foot issue that I've written about before, he works out barefoot. He comes out and does his running on the grass at ballparks barefoot. And he comes.
Oh, that's
running.
A San Diego native for you right there.
He comes running out barefoot. Loves the feel of the grass. And so he was out there for about 2 minutes and ran back in and never came back out. I have no idea whether he got some sort of burn on the bottom of his foot. I would not be surprised. It was such that it was that kind of heat. You could feel it through the soles of your shoes. So I would not be surprised. I did not have a chance to talk to him. I did not see Joe around very much during a time when it would have been appropriate to joke with him. I wanted to see what was that all about there out on the turf? Because when I watched him run out there, I'm like, what are you doing? And then he came back in. Maybe he got a blister. Look, they say that Joe can pitch on Sunday. So it looks like that's all that is happening, is that you're going to get Darvish today, Snell tomorrow, and Joe on Sunday. It was going to be Musgrove, Darvish, Snell. So still the same three pitchers, and it does appear that Joe should be able to pitch on Sunday. We'll see.
I can feel Joe's pain here. I lived for years in Arizona. We had turf in the backyard. You make the mistake of, you're on the phone, you walk outside, and it's you tell the story. I covered my eyes because I've been there, man. And I don't have to pitch for a living. I'm just sitting on my
back. I have no idea. Maybe it was nothing. Or maybe that's where Joe got a little burn on his foot. I have no idea. Regardless, just a little story for you from Mexico.
Absolutely. Kevin, this is the most highly anticipated series of the year so far. The last time these two teams played, the Padres were Dragon Slayers, to steal a line from your former co-host.
Or from Peter Seidler.
And from Peter Seidler. Well, but mostly from Jay Posner.
Sure. Great headline from one of Peter Seidler's quotes. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you think these two teams have changed since last year? I think that your average fan would look at both rosters and say the Padres are better and the Dodgers are worse. Is it as simple as that, or is there something more to it?
Well, I think it's interesting because I don't think that we know about either one of these teams yet. I think the Dodgers, it just shouldn't surprise you that they're 19-13. They found their footing in the last week or so because they're the Dodgers, and they always figure out a way to make it happen. Their pitching seems to have, Urias was getting lit up, quite frankly, and appears to have figured it out. Clayton Kershaw, this is pretty impressive the way that he has started this season. They mix and match so incredibly well with their lineup that, I mean, you for the first time look at go position by position, and you say that the Padres are better, theoretically, not how the Padres are hitting so far, but you say that they're better at most positions, and you would say they have nine of the nine players in the lineup each day, you would think, hey, wow, Padres can more than hold their own here. The Dodgers find a way to figure it out. The Padres have not done that yet, right? Mm-hmm. They beat them in the playoffs last year. The Padres, I believe, are a playoff team this year. If those of us on the outside, I already stated my feeling, what's important is the end of September and October. But those of us on the outside, and I do believe to a certain extent, the Padres can take this series yet again as something of a measuring stick, right? Can we beat the Dodgers on the regular? Can we, you know, no longer are we dragon slayers, but we're comfortable in our position here of people as a club that can beat the Dodgers on the regular. I don't know what it means more than that, but I do think that it's like a different kind of measuring stick, not of like how far away, how much have we closed the gap, but the kind of measuring stick of are we as good as them and, are we better than them?
Yeah, the Dodgers have an ability, I think, organizationally. I'm not sure anybody can manipulate a roster or manipulate a lineup the way the Dodgers do. They seem to be greater than the sum of their parts and have been for a while.
And it's funny that almost strictly by the analytics, by what the numbers tell you, every time it doesn't work out for them, there were a couple decisions in the playoffs last year, right? And there seemed to always be, right? Like in the playoffs for them. It's funny how you want me to back up what I'm saying about who cares. It's funny how often the Dodgers have won the division and how many times have they won the World Series in that span?
Right.
Oh, the one with the asterisk. But my point is, and I'm actually trying to compliment them, is I think playing the numbers and manipulating their roster, putting the right guy in the right place, I think that happens far more often. But every time it doesn't, then people are questioning them on why did they do that? Well, I don't know what to tell you. The reason that they're, consistently so good during the regular season, at least, is because that is how they do things. And it's really, really impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. One guy who does not need to be manipulated onto and off of the roster is Clayton Kershaw. I've written him off, Kevin, five times in the last 3-4 years. You see him, he'll have a back issue and he'll come back and he won't pitch well. Or he'll be limited the way he was last year in terms of they were really watching his innings and watching how much work he gets. He is 5-1 with an ERA under 2. He has a whip of 0.76. What's working for him? And what will the Padres try to do against a lefty here?
Well, there's got some guys who hit him fairly well. That Clayton Kershaw come here and throw, 6 shutout, 7 shutout easily, just like Darvish could do, who Darvish does well against the Dodgers. I haven't seen Kershaw pitch this year other than on the highlights. And of course, so then every time that I'm watching him, looks like
he's dealing.
A young reincarnated, which maybe he is. It is pretty amazing. What is it? 204 wins now or something, 202 wins.
202. It's
stunning. He has had to remake himself to a certain extent over the years. But it's not like he's a guy who had to keep up the 98 velocity either. So it's like, in some ways, like what you said, it's surprising that, oh my gosh, this is the Kershaw we're looking at. And in some ways it's not, because he kind of has always been this guy. And we have a treat going tonight.
Well, and the guy he's facing, Yu Darvish, same thing.
Yes,
Darvish doesn't throw 100. Yeah, these are two pitchers in the best definition of the term. Two guys. It will be fascinating to watch both of their minds work on them.
Yes. I every time that Darvish is pitching, I'm like, oh man, I need to write about this. And then something else will happen in the game. You don't really get to dive deep into. It's very rare that you do, but it's just, he's that fascinating that you're like, man, this is the story tonight. Because like what he did in Mexico to be able to not use some pitches to then, decide that, all right, I got to shelve these for a minute, establish these types of pitches, and then I'll come back. And all of a sudden there he is throwing a curveball to get a guy out and throwing the perfect curveball, because if it wasn't the perfect curveball, it probably was going to be a fly ball home run. He is just, he's a master.
Yeah, just incredible. Fantastic, fascinating weekend. If you like pitching, Dustin May, Blake Snell tomorrow night, then Sunday you've got Musgrove versus Julio Urias. The Dodgers manipulated their pitching situation so they could throw their three best guys against the Padres. Dave Roberts said so. I mean, there's no secret here. Does that signify a change in the dynamic between these two teams, do you think?
I don't know. It's interesting because I don't recall it happening last year. It didn't happen on the Padres side, whereas the year before it had. Both teams early on had their made no qualms about that they were having their best pitchers face the other team early April, May, June, or it was April and June. They played like those 10 games. And it was like, yep, we're lining everybody up. It didn't happen last year. The Padres didn't. They had a chance to, but they didn't have to. The way that the off days felt, I'm not saying the Padres didn't have this series in mind and say, right. Oh, okay, well, if we bring Musgrove back at this time, but it just happened that Musgrove came back at that time. So the Padres did not manipulate. I'm not saying they didn't line it up this way, but it was like, there were times where I was like, well, are they going to do this? No, they didn't. It just, this is how it worked out for them. So maybe the Dodgers saw that and said, hey, this is, let's put our best guys against their best guys. I find it interesting that you're doing that in May. The Dodgers of all teams know that 111 wins or a division championship doesn't mean anything. So, but why not, right? Plus, I also understand that Noah Syndergaard was lined up to pitch, and he's been pushed back to Monday against Milwaukee. It's not like they pushed him back to face the Reds. They pushed him back to face a first place team as well. But, you know, I guess they wanted a little extra time for him to work on whatever he's working on, try to get him right. Because they probably know that they need more than these three guys to hold off the Padres in the division. You know, there is a thought that these games mean more now. You're only facing your division opponents 13 times instead of 19, right? Just because last year, the first year of the six playoff teams, it didn't necessarily work out for the teams with home field advantage or with a week off. It doesn't mean that's not a good thing. Winning the division is still an important thing.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And you know, the easiest way to climb the ladder in your division is to beat another division team. It's a win for you and a loss for them. You know, it's that does matter more. Kevin, if I can go out of left field here, pun intended, Adam Engel's on a rehab assignment. This is somebody who you saw a little bit of in spring training. Is his arrival imminent? Is it going to be a couple weeks more? And if so, how does that dynamic change?
There's been a time where that it was imminent. I don't know if there's anything that's changed in the last couple of days, to be honest with you. But it's not like he's been tearing it up down there. There is a thought that he brings some things that help out the team in terms of speed and defense. But also, there's a thought of what don't they have right now? In what way are they hurting in any way? If Soto, you know, it's not like you're ever going to take Soto out in the ninth inning for defensive plays. You're not going to take Tatis out. You're not, you know, so there's not a lot of room for manipulation. And so I don't think there's any rush other than now his rehab paused for a bit while he had some personal business. At some point, he's going to be up against the maximum time that he can do it, and he's going to need to come back, and then they're going to have some decisions to make.
Right, because he's on a major league deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. That decision, does that become Odor? Does that become a Zocar?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think there's any – I don't think it becomes a Zocar. I think Odor's become a real nifty little part of this equation, but I don't know that outweighs what a Zocar brings. And, you know – Engel and Odor hit from the same side. I've always thought that it was Odor.
Yeah. I mean, and the Zocar is hitting much better than Odor anyway. Kevin, you covered baseball in the pre-DH era. Now you cover baseball where there's a designated hitter every night. My outside observation is that benches just don't matter like they used to.
Yeah.
Because you're not pinch hitting once or twice a game. In many ways, talking about these guys who are far down the bench, these are guys who don't really play. Are we overstating, you know, asking you about Adam Engel, does it matter?
Yeah, you know, it could to a certain extent, based on the fact that I, other than checking every couple of days, the stats and once a week asking a question about it, I'm not terribly concerned about Adam Engel. Whereas in the past I would have been, because even last year, and obviously the DH was here last year, but it was a different team. This team does not, the amount of times that Bob Melvin, the king of substitutions in many ways during his time in Oakland, has gone with only the 9 players that were in the lineup this year. It's the majority of games. And that was not the case last year, especially early before they got certain players. He was constantly mixing and matching. He was using defensive replacements. And you're just not doing that this year unless the situation absolutely calls for it. And so this team in particular, with the stars they have, with the power that they have, or theoretically, that you're, yeah, it's not nearly as important. That said, you get games like Brett Sullivan. You get games like Jose Azokar had a couple times. So I still believe in the overused cliche of, you know, it takes all 26 guys, or sure. The cliche now has become, it's, we're going to need 40 guys. But this team in particular, the starting 9 is paramount.
Well, and when you cover a super team, Kevin, and there's a literal all-star at like 7 positions. Yeah, you're not giving guys outside of a day off here and there, like what we've seen with Machado and Xander Bogaerts. You're pretty much, you know, playing and paying your superstars every day.
Yeah. So yes, it's less important than but I don't want to discount what they do. And Bob Melvin tries to use these guys as much as any manager. But yeah, when you see the usage of a Melvin managed team being as little as this is, then you understand that it's about the guys that are put in the starting lineup.
Absolutely, absolutely. Kevin, did you any observations from that Red series outside of the game that got away in extra innings?
The Padres are now 4-1 against the teams with losing records that they played. So this little break they got, right? 23 in a row in which they went 11-12 against teams with winning records. I think the majority of those were in first place at the time that the Padres played them. Now they got this break, right? Now they go Dodgers, Twins, Dodgers, all right, before you get Royals, Red Sox. But, I wrote it the other day, like, this is not an inspiring pace the Padres are on, but it's likely a playoff pace because they're not going to continue to play 75 to 80% of their games against teams with winning records. And that's just how you build, you know, your winning record is you hold your own against good teams, right? Mm-hmm. And you build up to 95 wins by beating the teams that you really should beat 2 out of 3 times. And that's what the Padres did against the Reds. I thought that this series, because let's just throw out Mexico City. They won both games, did what they needed to do. This series was exactly probably what it should have been. Could they have won that middle game? Absolutely. Should they have won the middle game? Absolutely. They took 2 out of 3 against a team that just isn't that good. Two starting pitchers, not that good. That was my observation, is that they did what they needed to do. And how many times have we actually said that about them this season? So I thought that was a positive development.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, Kevin, Dodgers are in town for 3 games starting tonight. I know that we're waiting for September and October, and it's strange to say those words. But I think people are stoked about the first Padre Dodger game since last year's win in the rain.
Got the classic. We have the classic City Connects and the classic Dodger Los Angeles script going tonight. Two of the historically wonderful uniforms in baseball. So this would be.
Did you just put the City Connects up with the Dodger uniforms?
I certainly did.
Don't slip that past me. Okay. Oh, that's great. That's great. By the way, if you're ranking Padre uniforms, because I always try to ask you something silly, you're ranking Padre uniforms. What's number 1, 2, 3, and 4?
Or what was the mustard, like full on yellow? Favorite uniforms of all time. Sorry. I was 4 years old. Love those uniforms. Every once in a while, I just click on a website just to go back and go, man, those were beautiful. I love the current uniforms. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Do not like, and the only reason you like the clown uniforms from the 90s is because during your formative years, your favorite team went to the World Series. That's the only reason you like those clown, whatever, what was that? Orange, blue, pink, daffodil, just hated those uniforms.
It's funny. Had the Padres gone to a World Series in any of the iterations 100%. That they've worn since 1998, they'd still be wearing them now, right?
We had nothing to look. Brown is beautiful.
Brown is beautiful.
Yep. Brown is beautiful. But we would not have had all this to complain about if you were, if you had a winning team to cheer for or write about. Absolutely. But here we are with a wonderful variety. I love both the road uniforms and I love the home uniforms. And quite honestly, I love the City Connects.
Yeah. The road pinstripes, I'll fight people over those. I think those are spectacular. The sand colored pinstripes.
I said it when I first saw them, and I saw them before most of the players did. I said, this is the one that everyone's going to love. And yeah. I think it's turned out to be that way. I now love the brown tops because we never see them.
Right. Right. So it's like weird. Once a road trip.
Yeah. Totally. And I think they're a great look, but yes, the sand pinstripes they're just so unique, and it's just so nice to, honestly, when you travel a lot, like you forget, like, okay, what city, where am I at? There were times I would walk into Miller Park or whatever it's called now in Milwaukee, and I would see that the Brewers were taking batting practice, and I'd be like, oh, the Padres are on the field. I better get down there. And I wasn't thinking because they looked exactly the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I like going to stadiums now, and you can tell who the Padre fans are because that brown just pops.
The city, be it Mexico City, it was phenomenal. Wherever I go now, and I think it has more to do with the popularity that I'm seeing more Padres hats and shirts in every city that I go to. And I'm talking about like downtown, not just at the ballpark, but you also notice them because now you see someone in a brown hat. And 99 times out of 100, if someone's wearing a brown hat, it also has a gold SD on it.
Right. The best part about the brown, Kevin, is that the Padres no longer look like the Dodgers. Which I think when they had the white SD on the Navy hat, that was downright Dodgery to me. And that probably did not sit well with me.
It's one of those things you look back and you go, who, like, why? Like, why did we ever, what was that? Like with the Pinto, like, you know, what, why? That's what I think about those uniforms.
Yeah. Oh, I love this. See, we should just, next episode should just be uniform talk the whole way. I think our listeners,
I gotta disagree, Ryan. I would have been with you for a long time, but I think the wonderful thing, and it's the point that you made, we're past that now.
Yep, absolutely. Now we can talk about games that matter. Right. Yep.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And no game this season matters more than the three we're gonna see starting tonight. Padres, Dodgers, Petco Park. Get out there if you like good pitching matchups. If you can afford a ticket, try to be at Petco Park tonight. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.